Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Beth Pulowich, registration number 16931. I represent Ray Leveno. There's three issues that we raised in this appeal, and I'm hoping to touch on each one of those issues. So let me start.
The amount of time you want to reserve?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, but I know how that goes. We'll see.
I'll give you a high sign in 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. This case is an interesting case in that it really is kind of a snapshot into what happened that led us to the mortgage meltdown and financial crisis that this country is now in. And just for context here, I mean, what the world that was operating at the time that Ray Leveno was a realtor and represented the clients that he represented that led to the criminal charges in this case. Loans and FHA loans and loans that were guaranteed by the Department of Housing and Urban Development were very easy to get. And everybody in the process was pretty loosey-goosey in terms of what they were checking. Realtors had no ability to check whether or not their clients were actually in this country legally. The lenders had the obligation to check whether or not somebody was here legally, but the evidence at trial established very clearly that even the lenders didn't have the ability to truly check someone's residency status.
Why does that matter?
Only in terms of context. I mean, I agree with you that it doesn't matter in terms of, and I'm not standing here to say that the facts of this case do not legitimately give rise to, or could give rise to, a criminal prosecution under the right set of facts. And indeed, we're not challenging the sufficiency of the evidence as to the forgery, the attempt to influence a public servant, any of those things. But in terms of the theft by deception and the conspiracy to commit theft by deception, I do not believe that the facts of this case, and I'm not saying that there couldn't be a case involving a realtor where maybe a prosecution would be appropriate, but under the facts of this case, there was simply no evidence to establish beyond a reasonable doubt that the crime of theft by deception or conspiracy to commit a theft by deception was committed. And, you know, primarily the issue is this.
Whether or not these borrowers were even within the realm of possible people who could pay off these mortgages. I mean, if he knew he was setting up a default, or you know, that the actual income was so much lower than what he was apparently assisting them in reporting to the lender, doesn't that rise almost to a theft by deception?
I don't think so, and I understand where there is an inclination to feel that way, but I don't think so. And the reason is this: if you look at this case, and you know, I would say that the Attorney General filed a piece of supplemental authority that I think is significant for a couple of reasons. Number one, I searched, and you know, I'm fairly decent at legal research, and I searched in every jurisdiction to find another instance where a realtor was prosecuted for theft by deception under facts that were similar to this case, and I could find nothing. Now, I did find
mortgage brokers.
Mortgage brokers is different, though, Your Honor. I mean, this is a case, I'm talking about a realtor who was accused of stealing, of theft by deception, as to vis-a-vis the federal government. Not vis-a-vis a lender, but vis-a-vis to the federal government. Because remember, the thing of value in this case is simply the promise to insure. There was no money that was taken from the federal government until years after the loan was made and a default occurred. So at the time that Ray Leveno engaged in his conduct, the thing of value was, and I'm not saying it wasn't valuable, it was a promise from the federal government that the lender then used to justify lending the money.
That promise to insure also resulted in some economic benefit to Mr. Leveno, correct?
It resulted in some economic benefit to Mr. Leveno, but it didn't come from the federal government. I mean, it came from his cut of the, you know, the it was his real estate commission. So,
but for the federal government guarantee or insurance, he would not have benefited in the manner that he benefited.
True, but that benefit to Mr. Leleveno did not come at the cost of the federal government. And, you know, he made a couple thousand dollars, I think, on each transaction. And I think the restitution that he was required to order to pay was nearing $400,000 in terms of what the federal government ultimately paid. But
you inferred that the relationship of your client to the government
if he had been a mortgage broker or a bank lender, an agent of a bank, he could easily be prosecuted.
Why not a real estate agent?
I think he can be prosecuted for forgery. And I think
talking about
the theft by deception.
I'm talking about death by
deception. Well, if you look at the elements of theft by deception, I mean, it just doesn't fit.
Why does it fit the mortgage broker but not your client?
Why does it fit the mortgage broker and not my client? I have not, quite frankly, Your Honor, I have not even seen a case involving a mortgage broker where he was where a mortgage broker was prosecuted in this way. And typically these cases end up in federal court. Typically they're prosecuted as some sort of fraud, mail fraud, some sort of fraud in that way. They are not typically prosecuted as theft by deception. And the one case that the Attorney General was able to find where a realtor was prosecuted, well, it wasn't a realtor that was prosecuted for theft by deception. That was a case where the realtor subsequently got, he was prosecuted for mail fraud under facts that are similar. And he entered into a plea agreement where he admitted to intending to defraud the federal government. He admitted all these things, so it was part of the plea agreement. That plea agreement was ultimately used to aggravate a sentence for another crime that this gentleman committed down the line. So not only does it not stand for the proposition that under those kinds of facts that could amount to proof beyond a reasonable doubt to sustain a conviction for theft by deceiving, but even the facts of it, I mean, it was based on the fact that he admitted to certain facts and it was applied to Illinois law. It was a very attenuated thing, and so I don't think that case really supports the prosecution's position, and it's the only case that
the fact that it has happened doesn't can't happen, but it's barred.
I'm not saying that it's barred, and I'm not saying that it can't happen. I'm just saying under the facts of this case, the evidence was not sufficient to sustain these types of convictions. If you look at the elements of theft by deception, it kind of illustrates the difficulty here. It requires that Mr. Leleveno, or that he assisted his clients in knowingly obtaining or exercising control over a thing of value. I'll concede that. The promise from the federal government is a thing of value. But the next element is that this thing of value was knowingly used in a manner that permanently deprived the rightful owner of its use and benefit. That doesn't fit. What happened here? What happened here is the clients obtained a loan from a lender, and that was premised on insurance from the federal government. Years down the line, they tried to pay these mortgages. Several of them had already purchased homes. They'd done this before. And they tried to pay their mortgages, and then when they ultimately, you know, their circumstances changed and they were ultimately not able to service the debt, then they defaulted, and that's at that point the federal government did sustain losses. But that is so far removed from what my client did, and it's just to have him carry around these felony convictions for theft by deception and conspiracy under these facts, it just doesn't fit.
So why isn't he part of the conspiracy when he was instrumental in providing the bad information or the false information to facilitate these transactions?
The evidence does not support that any of these folks intended to default on their obligations.
That gets me back to my first question.
They're not even in the reservoir of people who could potentially pay these loans off with their current income, thus the forging of the documents declaring higher income. If they could never have paid off these notes, isn't that the same thing?
I don't think those are the facts that this case was tried on, Your Honor. I mean, I think that's why I'm saying I think there can be cases where potentially a realtor could be prosecuted for this type of thing. But under the facts of this case, it doesn't support that. That's not what the facts were. And there was no suggestion of that. I guess I'll reserve...
About 4.5 minutes, and you said...
Okay, that's fine.
My colleague is reminding me with a note.
Thank you.
That's your second note.
May it please the court. My name is Carmen Moraleta, and I represent the people in this matter. My attorney registration is 34852. The defendant's sufficiency of the evidence claim fails for two reasons, Your Honor. First of all, knowledge by the defendant or the co-defendants that the government would sustain losses is not an element of theft. And in second place, Your Honors, the record supports that the defendant and the co-defendants knew that the government most likely would, or not most likely, that's not the standard, that their conduct was practically certain to cause losses to the government. Let me address the element of theft. Under the statutory definition and also the jury instructions I provided in this case, the defendant, the elements are that the defendant knowingly obtained or exercised control over a thing of value of the government by threat or deception, and knowingly used, concealed, or abandoned the thing of value in such manner as to deprive the government permanently of its use or value.
Since your opponent has conceded the fact that there is a thing of value, can you go on and address how the government was deprived of something?
Yes, Your Honor. So the defendant here knowingly and fraudulently obtain the exercise of, let me start, the thing of value here is threefold. First of all, is the endorsement of insurance by the government. Second place is the loan guarantee. And in third place, at the end of the day, we're talking about the government's money. And here, the defendant misrepresented information and also provided himself fraudulent documentation in order to approve loans for unqualified buyers. They were unqualified for two reasons. Because they were illegal in the country, they were unqualified because they did not have valid social security numbers, they did not have valid identification, and they were also unqualified because they did not have the financial means. They did not have the income, they didn't have the resources, they didn't have the assets or the earnings to qualify for these loans.
Let me just clarify my understanding. The government merely guarantees the loan. It does not make the loan itself, correct?
Exactly.
Okay, so the government agency here incurs no financial loss unless the borrower defaults and a deficiency remains after the lender forecloses.
Exactly.
So the government sustains no loss when it insures the loan.
Sustain no pecuniary loss. I agree.
Okay. Thank
until
you.
They default.
Okay.
Is there other loss other than pecuniary?
In this case, any loss? Well, I believe that in this case, by endorsing insurance for these fraudulent loans, and this goes to my third part of the argument. Legitimate and qualified recipients or buyers were deprived of the use or benefit of this loan.
Is there any evidence in the record that there was some kind of a limitation on the number of loans that HUD could guarantee, thereby consistent with your theory, if they fraudulently insure my loan, then they've somehow foreclosed from insuring Judge Roy's or Judge Fox's loan?
There's no direct testimony about the reasonable inference from the evidence and from the testimony of the expert is that legitimate qualified buyers did not get the benefit of this government insured loans. And under the statutory definition of benefit, includes a gain or advantage to the beneficiary, or also any gain or advantage to any person pursuant to the desire or the intent of the beneficiary. So in this case, our beneficiary includes, of course, the government and also any person pursuant to the desire of a government, clearly any qualified and legitimate recipients or any legitimate buyers of this government-approved loans were deprived of the benefit of this, again, federally approved loans.
The fact that other people trying to borrow money will not get these loans because
there seems to be an unlimited supply of federal money. And here we're not even dealing with money. We don't have to put any money on the table. We're just
guaranteeing something that may or may not.
That's a potential liability. Nonetheless, is there any? There is
testimony that people might be deprived because these were made guaranteed?
I don't believe there was direct testimony up to other laws. It's just, it's a reasonable inference from the evidence, Your Honor, that if the government endorsed this insurance for this fraudulent loans, clearly somebody else did not get this, did not get the benefit of this, insurance.
But why is that a reasonable inference unless there's evidence in the record that the government's, you know, the number of loans it can insure is somehow limited?
Well, there is circumstantial evidence, Your Honor. The government has $1 million reserved for these loans, and he gave away this money for these fraudulent loans. Clearly, that money did not go to legitimate recipients of this insurance.
So the pool is not unlimited.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. So as I said, the benefit includes gaining advantage to any person by desire or concern of the government. And just kind of to summarize my point, the defendant's knowledge that the government would sustain losses is not an element of theft.
The defendant must intend permanently to deprive, correct?
Well, the defendant in this case was charged under subsection B, which just required the knowingly obtaining or exercising control over the thing of value, and by threat or deception, and knowingly using or concealing the thing of value as to deprive the government of the thing of value. Under subsection A requires the intent to permanently deprive, but under subsection B is another, it talks about the knowingly using or concealing the thing of value.
But what was the government permanently deprived of when it elected to insure these loans based on false pretenses?
Well, when the defendant submitted all this fraudulent information to obtain approval of these loans, and actually when the government endorsed insurance and guaranteed the loans in reliance on the defendant's misrepresentation and fraudulently submitted documentation, at that point, by granting this or endorsing this insurance, at that point, the government was deprived permanently of the use of that insurance, or that money, or that endorsement, and that guarantee of the loans.
Oh.
How was it deprived? Because again, that
how was it permanently deprived?
How was it permanently deprived? Well, because at that point, that money was reserved for these fraudulent loans.
So the money that's reserved remains in the control of the government until there's a claim, correct?
Well, but at the end of the day here, at the end of the day, they defaulted, and the government had to pay this default.
But that wasn't my question. I apologize if it was unclear.
Yes, so could you please repeat your question here?
When the government certifies these buyers as available for an FHA loan, exactly what has the government been permanently deprived of?
Well, as I say, the promise to guarantee on the loans because of their limited funds.
So they've been, you're saying they've been permanently deprived of the opportunity to guarantee a loan for a properly qualified borrower?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is there evidence in the record that establishes that?
It's the circumstantial evidence so supports it, in Your Honor.
Commitment to insure.
Oh, yes, Your Honor, that's the thing of value, is the commitment to insure, the loan guarantee, and at the end of the day, the money. And as I said, knowing where the defendant knew that the government would sustain losses, again, is not an element of theft. And even assuming, just for the sake of the argument, that it were an element of theft, the record supports that the defendant and the co-defendants knew their conduct was practically certain to cause losses to the government. The record supports, Your Honor, that the defendant not only misrepresented the status, the illegal status of the co-defendant, he also misrepresented the co-defendant's credit, employment and earnings history, and also provided fraudulent W-2s, pay stubs, checks, utility bills, and employee information. The reason why the defendant encouraged the co-defendant to seek this government-approved loans is because they had a bad loan and credit history, and because they were illegal in the country. And by obtaining these loans, the government will be bearing any financial obligations of the co-defendants in case of default. I mean, these facts clearly support that the defendant knew that sooner or later the co-defendants were going to default because they just did not have the financial means, the financial resources to qualify for this loan. They don't have the earnings, they don't have the income necessary to qualify. So it was just a matter of time that this co-defendant will default, and in fact, it's just not that lack that all of them defaulted within a 1 year period, Your Honors.
They all called within a year?
I think within a year, approximately 1 year.
A 30-year mortgage.
Excuse me?
A 30-year mortgage?
I don't know. I don't know what the specific other mortgages. I'm sorry.
If I apply for a life insurance policy and lie to the insurance company that I'm not a smoker, And then the insurance company issues the policy giving me the non-smoker rate. Have I committed theft?
If you lie to the insurance company?
Not to make a claim, but just to induce them to issue a policy. Is that theft?
If you do that knowingly, and if you take a thing of value of the insurance company, and if you knowingly use or conceal or abandon the thing of value in such a manner as to deprive the insurance company of the thing of value, yes.
But what's the in my example, what's the insurance company been deprived of?
Your question was insuring you, granting you insurance, is that what you...
Yes.
That would be the promise to insurance you, a contract right. And contract right is included within the definition of thing of value.
That's in a one-party situation, and we have a three-party situation. Here we have the borrower, the bank, and the guarantor.
Mm-hmm. So, and just moving on, just would like to quickly address the defendant's remaining issues. Both of them were waived. The defendant's claim that his right to have a jury of 12 was violated was waived in open court. Defense counsel and the defendant agreed to a jury of 11 that was waived. And regarding the restitution claim, is waived because they failed to object to the restitution amount. below and or present any evidence to contradict that amount. And even on the merits, it fails because it's clear that but for the defendant's fraudulent conduct, the government would not have granted those, would not have endorsed insurance, and would not have sustained any losses. So unless the court has any questions, the people request the defendant's conviction be affirmed. Thank you.
Okay, I'll try and make the most of my 4.5 minutes here. I think that the difficulty with, and I am going to try and get to the other issues as well, so let me just say briefly that I think the difficulty with the theft convictions was really illustrated by the colloquy that was going on between this court and the Attorney General. It is difficult to articulate what it is that the government was permanently deprived of. And remember that the act of Ray Luebno and his intention, he had to have the intent that the government suffer these losses. And, you know, I think that the example that might kind of bring this home
if he didn't know that the why did he go through all this? Why did he just commit?
Well, and you know, and in terms of the facts of this case, Judge, the best case scenario here, and you know, I just disagree with what the Attorney General said in terms of what Mr. Luebno did. If all of the government's witnesses are believed, just taken at face value, and there's certainly lots of reason to not believe them, but if you believed everything that they said, the worst thing that Ray Luebno did was look the other way. He did not tell them how to go and get false papers. They were well aware. Each of them had lived in this country for well in excess of a decade. They all had their own false papers. There was nothing to show. They never took Mr. Luebno's computer, so there's nothing to indicate that he generated false W-2s, that he did it.
Well, I mean, the fact that they're here illegally doesn't really bear on the government's loss.
No.
I mean, that's a technical qualification for the loan. Their financial situation and their ability to pay the loan seems to me is germane.
True, but the bottom line is that there's no evidence that Ray Luebno did anything to falsify whatever false documents they brought. They did that themselves. There was no evidence to show that my client did anything to falsify those documents.
Financial documents.
I'm talking about their proof of employment and their you know.
How about their income, their employment history?
He did not generate any of that. That was documents that were brought to him. Not even. The co-defendants that testified against him, none of them said that he actually generated that information, and there was no proof of that.
But didn't your client specifically say as to, I want to say, something on the order of five? He knew that at least five of the loans were bad?
That was the confession that was supposedly admitted to trial that Agent Sanchez testified to. All that was said was that Mr. Luebno ultimately admitted that he participated in five bad loans. There was no detail provided. He never admitted to generating any false. Basically, what he admitted to was that he suspected, I mean, and this is if any of this can be believed, but that he suspected that these people may not have been here legally. But other than that, there was nothing from the supposed confession that went to that.
Now, on the deprivation, I mean, presumably, you know, everybody that's involved in this loan transaction has to set aside some reserves, and anybody guaranteeing that. Why isn't setting aside those reserves something that would deprive the government of using the money for other purposes?
There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever that touched on that issue. So, I guess theoretically, if there was testimony as to that, but there was nothing. Nobody testified that any other borrowers were deprived of, you know, legitimate borrowers were deprived of getting that money. There was absolutely no evidence to.
Let me try to distinguish. There's two related, but I think discrete points here. One is whether there was any testimony that by making these bad loans, bona fide applicants were foreclosed from an opportunity. That's a little different question than I think Judge Fox asked you, which is, was there evidence that for each loan, the government has to set aside certain of its assets for what a private insurer would probably call a risk pool?
No, there is no evidence at all on that point.
And there was no evidence that the government had some kind of a limitation as to the number of loans it could guarantee or the total amount of outstanding loans it could have under guarantee?
No, there was no evidence on that either.
Thank you.
Even if there were, wouldn't those people be the victims and not the government?
I would think so, but yeah, I haven't gone there since there wasn't any evidence on that, but good point.
We thank both of you for your arguments and briefs, and I can tell that by the retinue you brought with you, this may be one of your first arguments, and I compliment you on it, and the case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. Thank you again.